I'm Mark Steiner, and this hour we're going to touch on a couple of very important things, I think, facing the nation. We have heard that Barack Obama is going to make a statement after his meeting at the White House with George Bush and John McCain and other Democratic and Republican leaders about the bailout, and we'll talk more about that. But we're also going to look at the AP Yahoo poll this hour that came out about race in America. With some people say startling numbers, some people say numbers that people are not startled by, that expected, but they were quantified and they were verified in a lot of people's minds about the state of race in America. We'll talk about that and how it affects the presidential election. But first, and we'll be doing that with Leah Gilmore, my co-host and dear friend, who is our cultural editor here and renowned, humanitarian activist and singer as well of note in this planet. And Dr. Stacey Peterson, who is Assistant Professor of Communications at the College of Notre Dame, and good to have you for the first time on our program. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
I want to play this interview that we did with David K. Johnston earlier today, and he is a former business editor of the New York Times who wrote a very interesting piece about the bailout where he's saying, whoa, hold on, why are we moving so fast? We don't need this bailout this way. Let's hear this interview, then we'll come back to all of you and our guests. This is Mark Steiner, and welcome once again. We're going to talk for a while here with David K. Johnston, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He's formerly of the New York Times, author of the book Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with a Bill. And we found this piece that he wrote yesterday on pointer.org, which raises issues many people are not raising about this bailout. And David K. Johnston, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Mark.
I was really interested in this because few people are saying this. Even some of the economists that I've been reading a great deal about and people I've been interviewing, Stiglitz and others, are not even raising the same issues of, is this necessary? Is this bailout necessary at all? And talk a bit about that. I mean, the question you raise in your early on in your piece is, when you say, are the credit markets really about to seize up? Ask this question.
Well, see, the problem with the coverage of this is that Washington announced there's a crisis, and immediately it was accepted as fact. And I was just absolutely stunned by that. I mean, here's what Tom Brokaw said last Sunday at the opening of Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm.
The American financial system is in deep crisis. And there was a little tape of the president's remarks last Friday about the precarious state of the economy. Can a government rescue save our economy? And at what cost to U.S. taxpayers? I'm sorry, let's make the case first that there's a crisis. Maybe there is, but there wasn't the least indication of questioning the premise. Journalists were only asking questions around the edges instead of the premise. Now, that's changed, mm-hmm. and maybe to some extent my post at Pointer has had some effect on that, but we are now getting fundamental questions about what's going on here.
The problem is whether the elected officials in the Senate and the House are going to ask those same questions. Or they're going to be railroaded as they were with both the Patriot Act and the war in Iraq.
Yes. Well, one of the real serious reasons to be concerned about this is that, you know, we know now that the administration, which told us there were these weapons of mass destruction, actually knew there were not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to lie on that scale to achieve a goal, yes, I think you've blown your credibility and you got to, by chapter and verse, prove your case. And in this case, the immediate instinct that we got from the government was not, let's address the problems of the American people directly. Let's address the problems on Wall Street. And where do we get the campaign money that winnows people out and decides who gets put forward to the American public to run for high office? From the campaign finance system. So we have very good reason to be very, very skeptical of this. And, you know, the big argument being made for this is something called the TED spread. That's the difference between the interest rate on the short-term euro bonds and short-term U.S. Treasury notes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that spread has been as high as it is now in the past, and it wasn't financial Armageddon. And we have banks out there still making loans to small business people, offering all sorts of loans to ordinary people. Now, I realize that consumer credit is the end of the chain.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, there's no indication to the ordinary person that anything is amiss here.
Well, I wonder then, I mean, you ask these tough questions. Ask these tough questions about the bailout, and you list a whole series of questions, and they're really very interesting ones. Like if AIG and others are too big to fail, what should it tell us about the government antitrust policy and regulatory policy? And you ask questions, is there a less expensive solution? Is there a market solution, you ask? And so have you gotten any answers to those questions? Have you probed some of this yourself to find out what you think are the answers to those questions?
I have not, because at the moment I'm this week giving lectures at Northeastern University and the University of Texas. So I have not, but I have seen on the internet indications that some people are starting to ask some of these questions, particularly the one of, is this the least expensive way to do this? A fundamental tenet of competent management is that you provide alternatives. And this was presented as, you must do this, you must do it the way we said, and the authority will be unreviewable by Congress or the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Congress is not an appendage to the government. It is the first in the Constitution of the three co-equal branches of government. And the news media in the initial coverage didn't seem to pay much attention at all to this extraordinary seizure of power, $700 billion. Even if we end up making money in the deal, and nobody is asserting that we will make money in the deal, but we certainly should be able to recover some of that cost if we were to follow Mr. Paulson's plan. That's an expenditure of such an extraordinary amount. And remember, this is a Treasury Department that said that the American public could not afford $12 million more to go after Osama bin Laden's money, a story I broke in the New York Times about 5 years ago.
I remember that story, yes.
And they killed 12 million, just million. We're talking 700 billion, $12 billion to go after Osama bin Laden and his money because the American taxpayer could not afford it. There's something wrong with this picture here.
What do you think is wrong with this picture? I mean, do you think that, I mean, because you, the questions you ask come from both sides of the political fence, it seems to me. When you ask, are there more market solutions? Do we need more regulation? And what are the underlying causes here? So, well, what is it saying to you? I mean, in terms of why this is happening and why it's happening with such speed and why President Bush last night in his speech said that warning that a long and painful recession will occur, that including potential bank failures, job losses, inability for ordinary Americans to borrow money to buy cars or send their kids to college. And so what do you think is going on here?
Well, I think first and foremost that the very generally thoughtful, competent people at the Treasury Department have looked at the withdrawals of money Americans made from money market accounts a couple of weeks ago. It was an enormous amount of money. And looked at some of the other flows that go on between businesses, and it's really spooked them. And they are worried that banks, which regulated banks, unlike the investment banks on Wall Street, which have certain capital requirements, could well end up in a position where a number of them are in real trouble. Now, one of the things we don't know is whether they asked every major bank to submit to them some financial details about what's called their Tier 1 capital and their liquidity. One presumes that they have, although that's another question has not been raised. But they really are concerned that at the highest level here of commerce that there'll be a seize-up. And they're especially worried about overnight cash. You know, the government guarantees your bank account to $100,000. It's now put essentially an unlimited guarantee on money market funds.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of businesses have millions of dollars out there, and they don't need that money at the moment, and they loan it overnight to other firms. And if people are suddenly afraid to do that because nobody knows who owns all of these toxic, illiquid investments, then, in fact, the credit system would seize up. Well, why doesn't the government instead focus on, are there a handful of banks that are in a position that are dangerous? Why don't we identify the banks that are in real trouble and, if necessary, let them fail? Might that be a less expensive way to approach this? So anyway, we're not looking at, it seems to me, all of the aspects of this.
And if we do not do that, and if, in fact, by Friday they pass a bill which may be a modified version with some other input from the Democratic Party, a modified version of Hank Paulson and George Bush's proposal, then what do you think the consequence will be?
Well, first of all, Friday is an absolutely artificial deadline.
Yes.
And let's not forget that there's elections coming up here. And to think that there isn't somebody in the background describing this in political terms, of course they are. I mean, after John McCain made this abrupt and bizarre statement, he wasn't going to go to the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And come to Washington where he had nothing to do. He's not on the committees, he's not involved in this, and he doesn't know anything about this. the White House sort of rescued him by announcing that they were going to ask McCain and Obama to come to the White House. For what?
Right.
This idea that everything has to be done by Friday, it's motivated by the fact that Congress intends to recess Friday and go campaign. Well, Congress could come back into session if they have to next Wednesday. That's number one. Number two, it may well be there's a very serious problem here. I'm not disputing that there's a very serious problem, but a deliberative approach to this ought to be better. And if it turns out that suddenly there are things, everything won't seize up at once. You'll see something happen that will become clear to everybody there's a real problem, and we can then address that.
David K. Johnson, I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been marvelous to talk to you, and thank you so much for what you've written and getting a new conversation started in America about all this.
Well, thank you, and I hope journalists, you know, remember their first rule is skepticism. Check it out.
Amen. Thank you, David K. Johnston.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was an interview I conducted earlier this morning with David K. Johnston, and we'll continue these discussions with economic thinkers and social thinkers looking at the bailout. It looks as if the White House and the U.S. Congress and the presidential candidates are going to come to an agreement, but that agreement, more and more many prominent economists and thinkers are saying, is a mistake. We just read George Soros' piece in the Financial Times this afternoon. He said basically the same thing. Why are we bailing out the banks for $700 billion? Why aren't we waiting to see? Give it some time. Let's do a study. The banks that really are in need, let's see if they agree to the changes, and then you can shore them up. If not, let them fail. George Soros is also calling for, and other people are saying, that you can't do this unless you protect the first mortgages of people who have homes.
Exactly.
They have a right to go to bankruptcy court, which they don't now. You've got to put all kinds of things in a bill that the Democrats are not pushing for, and I think the Democrats don't realize the strength that they have. And the voice you just heard was Leah Gilmore, who's, again, with me. It was wonderful to see her back in the studio.
Thrilled to be here.
Dr. Stacey Peterson is here, Assistant Professor of Communications at the College of Notre Dame.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on with us. And join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And we're going to talk about the economy. We're also going to talk about the AP Yahoo poll, economics and race. We'll give you two more fundamental things to talk about in the United States of America.
We're going to solve all the problems right, here, exactly. Right now.
Exactly.
410-319-8888. So for a few minutes, and if something breaks and there is some statement we can pull up from Barack Obama, we'll stop and hear that. This afternoon, he is supposed to be making a statement. John McCain will probably be making with him. They're both at the White House together. But I just, both of your thoughts on all of this. I mean, here we are kind of barreling to the end of this, and it really does seem like the fox guarding the hen house with Henry Paulson and those in charge who come from Goldman Sachs kind of now pouring money into their friends' coffers and running it all.
Right. It's absolutely scary times. And the thought that, you know, Henry Paulson, he received this golden parachute of $50 million, is now saying, I'm the one to save everyone from his behavior is bizarre. And just in March, this past March, Henry Paulson said, I have great, great confidence in our capital markets and in our financial institutions. Our financial institutions, banks and investment banks are strong. Our capital markets are resilient, they're efficient, they're flexible. So this is the guy who's saying now, we have a crisis, we must solve it immediately, you must give me unprecedented power with $700 billion to solve this crisis by myself without congressional oversight of this money. This is definitely a time to stop, sit back, and be very deliberative about this process.
Absolutely, and I'm not an economist, but the bottom line is this has been building, and it's not like this just happened overnight. And for, you know, we put everything on the housing crisis and the housing market and the housing bubble. But the bottom line is that we've been playing around with this funny money for several years, and it was bound to crash and bound to burn. So when people are kind of motivated more by greed than by sensibility, it makes perfect sense that we would end up in this insane spot.
I agree completely.
I wonder, and I'm going to go to our first caller up in a minute, who's from College Park. So, Derek, hold on. I'm going to come right to your thoughts. We were going to talk originally today about the AP Yahoo poll that shocked some Americans to see how many people in America held these deeply racist views of 40% of Americans having a very, some deeply held negative feelings and attitudes towards African Americans. Most African Americans would say, I'm not shocked.
No, we're not, actually.
not one least bit.
Okay. But, and we will tell you that, Mark.
But it also shows that, pardon me, a vast majority of white Americans are not in that place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And but I wonder, now, there's been always been an old adage that, that economics trumps race when it comes to what happens in America, because then it becomes that, that and the question is, will this trouble the economy if Obama responds in a certain way that appeals to the mass of middle class and working class Americans across racial spectrums? Will that overcome the 10 to 25% of people who respond to this poll who seem to hold views that blacks are just not as worthy as white folks? So what do you think about that?
I definitely think that is a very definite possibility, because when people are suffering in the pocketbook, you're looking for some salvation. And I think we already see that just in the fact that, like we were speaking before, even this AP poll quantified what we already knew in a qualitative way, especially in the African American community. But when we are in pain, we're looking to get out of it in some type of way. And that will sometimes trump race. And we've already seen race trumped just because we're talking about Barack Obama as the Democratic nominee for the president of the United States.
Stacey Patterson.
And all of these
Peterson,
things,
excuse me.
That's okay. All of these things are interconnected. So when you think about it, racial issues interconnect with cultural issues, with economic issues, with gender issues. And it would be wonderful to see people realize that we do have a lot of things in common, regardless of what your racial makeup is right now. There are a lot of people, like they've been using the term, the folks on Main Street. Right. And the Main Street folks are feeling the same pinch and are feeling the same worries and are wondering, you know, am I going to have my job? Am I going to be able to use my credit card? You know, is my house valued what it was valued at a few years ago? And, you know, you're seeing that that Obama got a bump in the polls because people are feeling that he's more competent to handle the economic crisis that we're in right now. These polls, you can take them and leave them. But the bottom line is people should recognize that the economy is real. You know, economics, mm-hmm. dollars and cents, those things are real. Race, really, it's just a social construct. It really doesn't mean anything. It only means what we've attributed to it. So if we get right down to it, look, I want to make sure that my 401k and my retirement plans, I got big plans when I retire. Traveling the world, you know, so I want to make sure.
I think
sure
I'm going to have to, you got to take me, unless I get a piece of the $700 billion.
Right, I'm in the wrong business, you know.
We're all in the wrong business.
I'm telling you. But I think you make such a good point about that, about Main Street. You know, it's really, there. We have so much more in common, and the attributes that we've attributed to race have changed generationally as well. Mm-hmm. And we see that, we see that being reflected daily.
Now, I'm going to go over some of these poll answers in a minute, just because they're really very, they are, and even they're shocking, they're not shocking, they are shocking in terms of the vehemence of the attitude of a minority of Americans. That is, and it was, and it's the vehement numbers were larger than I expected, though I'd expected them to be there. And we'll talk about that in a minute as well. As we look at both the future and the bailout of Wall Street and whether or not Congress should be moving as fast as they're moving. There are many people of note in the world of finances who are saying no, stop, including George Soros. This should not be happening. Is this because the finance industry puts lots of money both in McCain's campaign and Obama's campaign? Do they have too much power in our civic life here? We do not have enough power as citizens of America in our own civic life. Is that part of the problem? And how should we rectify that? And how does that fit into this new poll that AP Yahoo put out that we will focus on again in the coming weeks with these guests and others, because it really kind of portrays the true picture of America racially, at least between African Americans and white Americans. And of course, we know the issue of race in America is way beyond black and white. Mm-hmm. As a Latino friend of mine said the other day, he wants Obama elected so we can get through this and start paying attention to us too. So 410-319-8888.
I'm sure Native Americans feel the same way.
Or write to us here at Steiner Show at gmail.com. And Derek in College Park, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Derek.
How you doing?
I'm well.
It's actually Eric.
Eric, I'm sorry.
And good afternoon, ladies.
Hi,
good
Eric. Afternoon, Eric.
A couple of things, I'll try to put this together as succinctly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a country that is stratified by race, class, and gender. Okay, if you look at Wall Street is dominated by white men, affluent white men. Okay, and you had Henry Paulson step up, who was almost a billionaire. Step up and say, "I need $700 billion to avert a financial crisis." Largely a body of white men and other and some minorities in Congress and in the Senate who are affluent themselves. Okay, now,
mm-hmm.
So yes, I do believe that when it comes down to it, economics does trump race in a lot of respects, although you have seen that white working class demographic has been highlighted, particularly in the Democratic Party primary. That was the source of support that Hillary Clinton called on to fuel her comeback in the race, although she ultimately lost. Now, I recall the Reagan Democrats, okay, mm-hmm. and Ronald Reagan got many of these people to believe that somehow so-called cultural issues trump their economics. Well, most people don't recall this, but those so-called Reagan Democrats, particularly in those Michigan auto plants, did not have a job the year passed. Now, specifically with regard to the bailout, this proposed bailout, Mr. Johnson, I heard him on, I heard you play a tape of his interview.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is very interesting is that he said that there are a lot of derivatives and CDOs and mortgage-backed securities that are illiquid, and the fact that you don't have any examination as to the liquidity of the banks and their Tier 1 fund, okay? And then also the fact that you have a billionaire, George Soros, saying don't bail out the banks who caused the problem, and with no... And we don't have an identification of what banks are causing the exact problem. I think this is something that Americans need to stand up against. Because, and also, I'd like to ask this question, and I'll take the comment off the
sure.
air, the answer off the air. And this goes to your two guests.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mandate? I think it does. In my mind, it mandates the reenactment of Glass-Steagall for one. But other stricter measures to rein in Wall Street.
Well, I'll answer that question. But give me a quick question. Are you a student?
Am I a student?
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Just called from College Park is why I just asked. Just curious. Good to hear from you. And the answer to that, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of argument about whether Glass-Steagall should be reinstated. And he's talking about the act that was developed under the Roosevelt administration that was put in place to stop large banks from consolidating and putting investment banks and the marketplace in the same business with banks and making sure they're all regulated so that the greed didn't take over and that they were monitored. And the bills, starting with Reagan and Clinton, they were put forth by Senator Graham and others, and the Secretary Robert Rubin, who under Clinton, put bills out that destroyed the Glass-Steagall Act. And that let loose what we see on America now. So the question is, what he's asking is what some people are calling for Congress to do, which is don't just bail these folks out. Maybe we shouldn't be bailing them out at all, but we should be instituting new regulations
to oversee
Wall Street and banking. And because right now, I was reading the Graham Bliley Act this morning, parts of it, kind of pulling them out from the web.
That's okay. Reread it also.
So I was kind of going through it and things in that act were saying things like, there's literally an article in that act that said, we will not regulate the behavior of the financial industry in any ventures that take place that were developed on or after December 5th, 2000, when they created the act. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, they put it in, codified in law, that they can't control what's going on. And so what Eric's saying, shouldn't we go back to a place where we are regulating this, not letting it just be rampant on the American scene?
Well, you know, I think that deregulation, we're actually seeing the vestiges of deregulation in its craziest form. Mm-hmm. And plus, this is exceptionally complex. You know, we're talking about $700 billion. We don't know how that's going to be separated. Is that enough? Is that not enough? Where did the number come from? What does it mean for me? What does deregulation mean? What does regulation mean? All these things are very complex. So it's easy to sneak those things in. And we must also remember that Phil Graham, one of the authors, is also the guy who said, you know, we are whining and this isn't a real recession. It's all in our heads, because he's not suffering. But the caller mentioned what's happening in Detroit. And yesterday, quietly, Congress approved $25 billion bailout for Detroit automakers.
That's right.
That's in addition to the $700 billion that has not yet been allotted. So where is all this money coming from? I'm always shocked that, you know, we can't find universal health care. I just had a moment. But we can find $725 right. billion dollars for these companies.
It's overwhelming. And I'm not an economist, so I don't want to speak on things that's not my expertise. And I just think the numbers are just overwhelming. And you have to ask yourself, you know, like Leah said, where is this money coming from? How much of this is going to negatively impact me? And, you know, it tacks on to our earlier discussion. All of these things are going to play some kind of negative role in every single regular American's lives. The folks who are getting the big golden parachutes and the bailouts and things, their lives aren't going to change. I often think every time ExxonMobil comes out and they talk about how many more billions they've made, and I say to my friend, why can't they just give back some of it to subsidize?
I agree completely.
Just subsidize. They wouldn't even miss it because I feel the pinch when I go to the gas pump. And I feel the pinch when I put my heat on.
That's right.
They don't feel it.
Well, you know, it's
that's
not,
right. But that's too much common sense.
Well, it's like, you know, I told you before we went on the air that Lucille Robinson, who was the first woman I interviewed for our Just Words series on the working poor in America, died. And she died because she was poor and she was black. Mm-hmm. And she died because she couldn't get the health care she needed. And she might have been alive today. And she was a grandmother taking care of her five grandchildren because nobody else would. Now, who's going to take care of them? And all she wanted from the government was to make sure my lights were turned on, my streets were safe, and we had enough food in the house, and I'll take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. And she was taking care of those children. But we couldn't do that.
Right.
That's right.
We
mm-hmm.
couldn't take care of this grandmother and her five grandchildren to make it to the other side, become productive citizens, but we can bail out the folks who have the money. That's obscene to me.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely obscene. Absolutely. And now, just like Stacy said, when we have Exxon got unprecedented in the history of capitalism. They had the most profit ever in the history of capitalism. And so when we live in a society where not only the poverty-stricken are feeling this, but now the middle class.
Absolutely.
And the upper middle class are starting to feel like, I can't pay my medical bills.
Right.
I can't send my kids to school. My kids are not going to go to college. We're now further polarizing the haves and the have-nots
right.
and creating a very dangerous society.
Let me open the phones here again, and then we're going to take a switch, and we are going to talk about something that Stacey Peterson knows a great deal about, which is this poll on race in America. But first, 410-319-8888, and Michael, you're on the air. We got Michael there? Okay. We don't have Michael there. We do have
hello,
Michael.
Hello.
There. Michael, you're on the air.
There he is.
Good to hear you. Good to have you back, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Hello. Let me just say, I agree with all the last comments about our priorities and how disgusting it is. But let me try to also put my economist hat on and try to describe, I think, more aptly what really has been asked for. The Paulson essentially asked the U.S. Public through the Congress to allow him to run the largest hedge fund the world has ever known. And that's essentially what it is. These are not expenditures. This is an investment. And we have to trust, almost like in a George Washington way, that absolute power will not corrupt absolutely, and that the largest hedge fund in the history of the world, you know, will eventually return profit to the American people and stabilize markets. And that's really what's gone on. And the reason was what the earlier caller said, is these illiquid investments that, you know, even us in finance have trouble understanding. But essentially, you can't place the blame on any one bank because they're so interconnected that once one or two started to fall, the counterparties on the other side didn't exist, which meant that they had to write down those losses. And so then they had to increase their capital reserves. So you got this debt spiral, even, capital chasing capital, even mm-hmm. so-called healthy banks. And it started to spread. And so that's the reason they needed to act big, because although he may only spend down $150 billion, when he does need it, he's going to need it quick, because he's going to need to stabilize the markets. Now, the problem is, he's so, you know, it's such a powerful thing that you got to trust that this guy, you know, is going to discharge his duties well. And then you wonder, well, who comes after him? Because if he burns out and this thing's not done in a few years, who comes next? And you can't assume that, you know, like George Washington, he's just going to go back to farming.
Michael, I'm glad you called in. I'm glad you're part of the show. We're going to take a brief break and come right back and talk about what it means in America, if this latest AP Yahoo poll, that 25% of Americans are bothered, 25% of white Americans are bothered that black leaders ask government for racial equality in the workplace. And more that's out of this poll from AP Yahoo. Join us at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm sitting here with Dr. Stacy Peterson, Assistant Professor of Communications at the College of Notre Dame, Leah Gilmore, who is the Center for Emerging Media's cultural editor, a human rights activist, and a renowned performer in her own right here and abroad. Join us here to talk now about the AP Yahoo poll that really was very illuminating about racial attitudes in America. Join us here as you hear this conversation unfold with your thoughts on all this at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And things like, let me just read you a few of these things. We can kind of talk about them. And it's interesting to me that much of the media has not really digested or had intense conversations about this poll. I think it's probably the only poll I've ever seen that really kind of goes under, mm-hmm. and has a 2.1% margin of error, right. Not done like any other poll in the nation, mm-hmm. done by a university as opposed to mm-hmm. just a polling group. And the 2,600 people were questioned for this poll. And it focused on the issues of race, black and white in America. Now, one of the things that came out, only 7 in 10 people who call themselves Democrats support Barack Obama. And which was so, and a lot of it came down to issues of race. More than a quarter of all Democrats expressed doubt about Obama. They can bring change, and they may vote against him. But 3 in 10 Democrats who don't trust Obama's transgender abilities say they're going to vote for McCain. 1/4 of those Democrats say they will not vote for Obama, and 12% of those Democrats say they will not vote for him because he's black.
Not shocking.
And that, but this is a margin of error. We're talking about people who have the attitudes here of race in America, and just are about African Americans being lazy, irresponsible, easy to anger, come out in ranges of 15, 20, and 25% of feelings about those, about African Americans. On the other hand, a majority of those folks say they'll still vote for Obama. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's There's a complexity
right.
going on
yeah,
here.
Yeah, there is very complex. As I think it's as complex as racial dynamics are in this country, especially during these times. And we were talking a little bit after air, and I didn't see the 7 and 10 as just 7 and 10. I saw it as, wow, 70% of white Democrats support Obama. And I think that's my own personal experiences there. Yeah. Because 85% of Republicans support McCain. And it didn't seem that far away from me, you know, 70 and 85%. I think it's an exceptionally complex issue. This is a fascinating poll, the way they did it. Mm-hmm. But Stacey, I would be intrigued, you know, we were talking, just to hear your perspectives, you know, because this is your world.
Well, and it's just ironic. We were just talking about this very issue in my class yesterday morning. So if my students are listening, it's like, see, it really is real stuff. But I think one of America's big pink elephants has now been crystallized. And now we have it concretely stated. People were able to take part in this poll relatively anonymously and tell how they really feel.
Mm-hmm.
And now that the pink elephant is crystallized, let's just be real about this now. Let's stop ignoring that we do have a society that has a racial focus, a racial underpinning, that there are people out there who are uncomfortable with black people, or black people who are uncomfortable with white people, because that's not really an element of the survey. But
it's unfortunate it's not, actually.
Yeah, maybe that's the next one.
I think that would have been intriguing, yeah.
Sure. And because maybe that's the next one, because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure if you're a black man in America and you see, you know, police headlights, you're probably scared.
Of course.
You know, and so, and a lot of times people, we kind of push those things by mm-hmm. like it's not a societal issue, and it's a very serious societal issue. So I think the fact that we haven't been talking about this, it's like, it's a cancer that's been eating us up. And what happens if you don't treat a cancer? You it eats you alive and you die. You know, you die from within. Let's not do that. America is better than that. You know, think of all the things that America's been founded upon. If we could actually live those things, liberty and justice for all. Right. You know, if we could do like Dr. King said and judge people by the content of their character. Because it seems like we spend so much time categorizing people by something that is so arbitrary, race. We could make a law tomorrow that changed the dynamics of race just like that. We've got black and white. We could decide that we're going to make black, brown, white. And then Obama mm-hmm. wouldn't be black anymore.
There you go.
You know, so this thing is so arbitrary. And when I look at, you know, judgments and criticisms that people have based upon nothing. You know, some of the comments in the poll, you know, there's one quote from a gentleman out in Ohio who says, "We still don't like black people." And it's like, I want to say, well, dude, have you ever met a black person?
Right.
Well, I think the poll talks about.
And he's 57.
About,
so right. we really have to talk generationally
well,
about
no, no, but
this.
No, but the latest
well.
Study out of this poll, mm-hmm. actually, that's not true. According mm-hmm. to this poll, that the latest segment is that there's not much difference when you define by class and region on attitudes about race.
But when you add class and region.
In terms of generation. I mean, I was really shocked by that. I just read that part today. I didn't expect that at all. And I mean, there's but what it looks like to me in this poll is that there are 10 to 25% of white Americans who hold really profoundly racist views mm-hmm. in a deep way. If you look at how the questions were answered mm-hmm. and how they crossed, you know, and like I said, there's one thing. One question was here. Some people say that black leaders have been trying too hard. Others that they haven't been pushing hard enough. What do you think? And in the white community, trying to push too fast was 21%. And haven't pushed hard enough was 12% of white respondents. And 62% said that pushing was about at the right speed. So, I mean, it's an interesting kind of variable here. And they kind of, when you look at these things and the attitudes crossing, I mean, there's this chunk of really deeply racist people in America, but it looks to me also it's saying kind of the undercurrent here, maybe the subtext, and maybe you don't, is that people are struggling with this
right.
and working on changing, is what I see.
Well, I think your latter comment is exactly right. I think people are working through it because if I'm understanding, 62% said, you know, were supportive of moving forward
yep.
in some way. That's a larger number than I would have
sure.
expected as well,
absolutely.
Just like the 7 and 10. I'm actually
right.
shocked with 62%. So, Mark, I think we see it quite differently, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's very experiential. Race, as Stacey said, is such a deeply embedded part of our society and just how African Americans were brought here is still
absolutely.
Part. Anytime you are put into the law of the land as 3/5 of a human being, and, you know, and you are viewed as property.
Mm-hmm.
And just a few hundred years later, you have the Democratic nominee for president as being an African American person. There's no way that you're not going to have this amount of people with these deeply rooted, especially people, deeply rooted views, especially people who don't walk with African Americans, black folks daily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things also this poll kind of showed, that the numbers of black people and white people in America who do not know one another.
There you go.
And how do they know each other? That when they learn each other through the media.
Through the media.
Do you see a lot of positive African Americans in the television? Ever since the Cosby Show phenomenon, we've been dwindling, and unless we're on reality TV
exactly.
or we're on MTV.
There's no balance
right.
of black images. So because one of the words that was used to describe blacks is boastful. And I thought that was kind of funny. I said, well, that must be because of the hip-hop videos or
exactly
professional
right.
sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, where did that come from? And how did
right.
that get to be a negative term? You know, so if you feel confident in yourself and you want to swagger a little bit, how
because
is that?
Because there's boastful and there's confidence, right?
Right.
So we're boastful.
Right. You know.
What do you folks think out there? 410-319-8888. What do you all think about the poll we've been talking about racial attitudes in America? How do you think it's going to affect the election we're in now? 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Christopher, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark. Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
I just wanted to make a comment, and then I have a question.
Sure.
And my comment is this. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and while the primaries were going on, the way that Hillary did well in Pennsylvania and the polls that were coming out at the time really sort of, to me, reflected the racism that's still around. And so to me, this poll is not surprising at all. And I'm worried about the Bradley effect in the upcoming election year with Barack. My question is, on your other subject, sorry, I'm running after my kids here.
That's all right. It's okay. We can be patient. Go ahead.
I'm running out of breath. I emailed and went to the websites of both of our senators. I was wondering, what else can we do to stop this madness with the $700 billion? You know, I just would urge you to let all your listeners know what we can do, because this is just crazy and we need to stop it. All right.
I agree. I mean, we need to write our senators and congressmen, let them know how we feel immediately. And I hope if they do not vote on this by today, they may be pushing it to next week, that we will start getting them back on the air with us next week to say, to really question people like Dutch Ruppersberger and Elijah Cummings and Ben Cardin and Barbara Mikulski and Wayne Gilchrist and all the rest and Donna Edwards and Van Hollen, and see why are you pushing this through so fast?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you.
410-319-8888, and Sammy, you're on the air.
Hello. My name is Sammy. I just wanted to say I appreciate your show. I enjoy listening to your comments. I can tell that the people on the show are very courting the way they talk. Your intellectual basis is coming out, and I enjoy your comments.
Thank you.
Wanted to comment. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. I grew up in Baltimore City, and I see many the race problem. It's sad because we're all God's children, brown and black and white and green. But you see a lot of the negativity with the black and the Greek. Everybody's different in America. We are all different. And we all have to learn to live with one another. And you're going to see the race here in Baltimore with D'Alessandro, the mayor. And the daughter of D'Alessandro is Pelosi.
Right, right.
You know, so, you know, many things you see in a circle, but it doesn't matter. The color doesn't matter. It's the character of the person. And we all must live it this way. But when you see everybody in the biggest super pot, United States, some people get their toes stepped on. And the race, it does play a factor. Unfortunately, it's the way it is. We just hope that the people don't get their foot stepped on too hard.
Sammy, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. I'm glad you're listening to us. So, I, when you were talking earlier about the numbers of people in this poll who use things like words like complaining and violent, mm-hmm. And these things do affect the way this vote can come out. When 40% of the white independent voters feel that blacks would be better off if they just tried harder.
Again, where are those images coming from?
Right.
Because a lot of whites who probably responded to this poll don't interact with African Americans. And we see the images that are constantly, constantly perpetuated via the media, which is your main source.
Absolutely.
And I see more African Americans in handcuffs than I do getting college degrees. And I know that we have serious problems within our community, but we also have serious victories
right.
within our community that don't get equal time. So these types of attitudes are pervasive and they stay.
Right, because the black middle class has been continuously growing. Mm-hmm. There are larger amounts of black students graduating from college with college degrees and broadening this middle class. But those stories you don't see.
No, we don't
especially
see that.
Like CNN's Blacks in America, I think. You know, I had such problems with that.
So many problems.
Yes, because you call it Blacks in America, but you talk about it's the same images that
right.
we already know exist, but what about those victories? Because they are as important as our difficulties, which
right.
we know are there.
Well, that's why a show was inspired there for us that we hadn't done yet, because when we were on that panel, I had you on the show, here for that show, and we realized we had this body of young 30-something African-American men, all of whom had been through college from very different circumstances,
mm-hmm.
middle class, from the streets, from all parts of the country. So let's have a conversation with mm-hmm. young men on the move
mm-hmm.
and hear their voices, because you don't hear those voices.
Mm-hmm.
You only hear about people who are in jail or dealing with drugs. And, you know, the parallel murder took place when Ken Harris was killed.
Right.
One of the young women here at Morgan said to me that, you know, we need to clean up Northwood Shopping Center because we students at Morgan can't walk over there to get money out of the ATM without fear of being mugged.
Mm,
and
right.
so it's an important conversation to have, to let America see that there's, that the black image of America is not the image that TV
right.
promotes. And so what do you all think? 410-319-8888 and Clarice in Pikesville, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. First of all, I'd like to just say thank you for providing a refreshing afternoon alternative for me as I come home from work.
Oh, great. Thank you.
some of the shows are somewhat biased. As for what's going on in the political race this year, I'm really concerned that African Americans are not opening up their eyes to who they are and really what their values are. They are forgetting about their background, and they're caught up in the hoopla of the first black president. They need to listen very, very carefully to their hearts and to their personal value system to really see which candidate supports their real value system versus the fact that it's the black man that's coming into the race. They really need to think out of the box and leave the bipartisan, or not the bipartisan, but the Democratic Party or Republican Party, forget the stereotypes of all of that, and take a real, real good look at our value system, how we as blacks have grown up, and they'd be really surprised to just see what party they really, really do identify with.
It's really interesting.
I'm just curious, is if Clarice is still there. Is there something you're trying to say?
Yes.
Well, basically what I'm trying to say again is that I think African Americans this year have really been caught up into Barack Obama because he's a black candidate, and this is the first time we've ever had one, and we're not thinking about the issues that are at hand here that each of the candidates are trying to express, and we're looking at the superficial part of the race.
I think what comes...
For example, let's talk about the fact that the Democrats have such a pro-choice stand, okay, on issues, and then there are the Republican parties or the Republican candidates are taking a different step.
Okay, let me say, in just the interest of time, Clarice, let me let Stacey kind of jump in and respond a minute.
Well, I will say that there is something very strong to be said about knowing where you stand on issues and knowing how you feel about particular things. And so what I do is I start with what are the things that I'm concerned about, and then which of the candidates is addressing those issues. So I understand what she's saying. You know, there's kind of been this Obama mania. And for many reasons, I think it is.
And beyond the African American community.
Sure, absolutely.
Or he wouldn't be the nominee.
Well, if you watched his speech, you know, when he accepted the nomination and you looked at the crowd, first of all, they had to move it to the stadium because there were so many people. And when you looked around, I found myself being really emotionally moved because I said, wow, that's America. And there were just,
We were there.
It was America.
It
was.
I think Clarice makes a very interesting point, and I support her point about thinking for yourself.
Absolutely.
Think that's extremely important. I think categorizing that all African Americans are thinking one way about a candidate is unfortunate and not true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should really see African Americans as not a monolith.
Absolutely.
But the media often says African Americans think this. And we, again, become victimized by those pervasive images. So I think there's definitely something to thinking nonpartisan. But if you choose the black candidate because you support the black candidate and you're black, you have every right to say so.
But well, I have a comment on that, but let me be fair and let the listeners come back. I want to ask you a question about what you just said.
Sure.
Explore more. Let's go back to the phone. It's 410-319-8888. And Naya in Washington, D.C., you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Naya.
I just wanted to make a comment on the poll.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we forget is there's a lot of unconscious racism on the part of Caucasians because they don't have to learn about African-Americans. You don't have to know about African-American culture. Whereas on the African-American side, when we're brought up in the school system in America, you have to understand, you have to learn about the dominant culture, and you have to learn about the majority. So if you are ignorant of a culture, then a lot of times you're going to have negative stereotypes in your mind, and you're going to be thinking negatively about a group of people, and the only thing that you will have to rely on is media, because you don't have to know about them. You don't have to go in depth with them.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting point, Naya.
That's a great
you're
question.
Getting
it. She's absolutely right.
She hit the nail on the head.
Absolutely. Right. Because even in my capacity as a faculty member, there are times where, and I work in a college, and colleges tend to be progressive-minded and a lot of times liberal places. And I'm still surprised sometimes how little whites know about blacks. But just like she said, I need to know about white people. I can't progress in my career or progress in society if I don't know about white people.
Right. And really know.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, I'm sure, Stacey, this happens to you as well, because the caller really, really brought up a great point. I get asked, well, Leah, what do African Americans think about this? And it's really striking,
right?
Because all of a sudden, I'm speaking for, you know, 13 million people who think this way about that thing or one another. But I don't know if that happens the reverse often.
On the way back to the phones, let me just read another piece from this
sure.
from this poll. It's interesting. Let me slide this over here. My old eyes can see this thing here. Okay.
I've got my glasses on.
Be nice, because I'm very fragile. Okay, here we go. When they say, when the question was, in this one question was posed was, how well do each of these words describe blacks, all right? And I'm not going to get through all of it because we don't have enough time, but the white response, I'm going to read to that, all right? Law-abiding. And was extremely well and very well was the response of 19% of the people. 26%, slightly well, 8%, not at all. So that then there's a consistent line through all of these that is like 20 to 30%. That's what I'm saying. It's really, and I'd love to see the breakdown in terms of region and where this comes from. And intelligent at school, 20%. 46% of whites said that was moderately true.
But Mark, it gets back again to what we were talking about the images. I mean, how would you know if you don't go to school with African Americans, or you know, you constantly see African Americans in special education because you equate that with African Americans?
Right.
You know,
well, it's just a large minority of people, about 20%, who hold these really extreme, extreme views. You know, that, and I was just, every time I read that kind of stuff, I guess it shakes me a little bit to go, right, to realize that it's that deep in some sectors of America still.
But we cannot draw these massive conclusions based on one example that a person may have, because I think sometimes these things come from, like Leah said, you get these media images, or one person had a bad experience with a black person, and now all black people, right, are like this. And it's like my friend always says, you can't make your judgments based on the sample size of one. And too many people seem to just, they fall right into that. And it's just, first of all, it's wrong, and it's incredibly irresponsible. And, you know, in an engaged society that we should be in, that's irresponsible. So I just, when I hear things like, it doesn't surprise me, but it's we got to get past that.
Yeah, and I think the weight we give these things is important as well. I think this is intriguing to know. I think we know it, and I think, like you, we talked about before, just having it quantified is so helpful. But we know it, now let's go. Now let's move. You know, let's keep going.
Let's use it as a springboard,
right,
so we can learn more things about each other. Because like the gentleman Sammy, we all have to live together.
Ladies, I have to end the program here. I want to thank all of our callers for calling in and writing in. I want to thank Stacey Peterson and Leah Gilmore for being here today. Leah, it's always a pleasure to have you co-host with me on the air here.
Thank you.
Stacey Peterson, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you here. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered and directed by Zachary Coleman. Our intern and interim producer is Judith Lloyd. You can podcast this show by going to www.steinershow.com and Republic Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.